All right, this is Frank Maloney with Jim Hobgood. You're listening to Who's Talking. We've also got Chris Sill in the studio for his first appearance. In a few minutes, we're going to bring on the Sabres, the Sabre editor, Chris Wright, a good friend of the show, really, since the inception of Who's Talking. But for a few moments here, Hobbo, let's talk about a couple of other things. How about your experience at Zacharias Ganey?
That's right. You just heard Mary Jane Ganey on that last ad before we came back, and I have been given the opportunity to go through their weight management program, the 10-week program, and a lot of time down at Zacharias Ganey. You get used to that trip down to Laburnum Avenue. But the thing that's really impressed me is the professionalism, Mary Jane and Madge Zacharias. The lectures are terrific. The information you gain from that, and just the weight training and the cardio, the exercise machines and so forth. Just and the funny thing is, you go down there, the thing that struck me is how many people are there. The staff is all unbelievably kind and cordial and professional, and I have run into a bunch of people that I know, either through church or elsewhere. So just a terrific. So we encourage anybody who's has an interest, go ahead and give Zacharias Ganey a call. I think you find it worthwhile.
Well, I know Linda Hobgood is very happy that you're going to Zacharias Ganey.
Well, she always makes the distinction between the word fewer and less, but in this case, it's hard to imagine anybody would want less of Jim. You know, most people want all of Jim they can get, but in this case, I think she actually would like to see less of Jim.
Oh my God! All right. That was
Moores Volvo.
Hey, and let's welcome our newest major sponsor, Moores Volvo. A great company. It's actually family owned, locally owned. Great guy, Ron Ferguson. Just a terrific company. They do a great job. They have an excellent warranty program, an excellent service center.
And Frank and Jim will be driving new Volvos how soon?
Well, they told us any day now they're getting those new
cars.
Oh,
okay, good, good. That's good.
So we get to go try them on. But one thing's for certain, Moores Volvo has got two wonderful locations, one here in the West End right off of Broad Street, and then there's the South Side Edition, which is over there on Midlothian. And I would really stress, having known Moores Volvo for many years, they've always done a great job, and I know a lot of people are very loyal to Moores Volvo, but we're delighted to have them as one of our major sponsors now, and we'll be doing more things in the near future. So anyway, let's get back to football. Chris Wright, are you there?
Yeah, I'm with you. How you doing?
All right, didn't mean to wake you up there. All right, we're excited to have Chris Wright. He's the editor of the Sabre and really has been a good partner for Who's Talking, really, for 4 years. And Chris, you and I sat near each other in the press box for the game, and what were your takeaways from the ball game on Saturday?
I'll tell you what his takeaway was. He needs a different seat next week is what he needs.
You see what I have to put up with there, Chris?
You know, I thought they looked good, but not great. You know what I mean? Like they took care of business, won very easily, but there are lots of little wrinkles and areas that make you worry, whether it's, you know, run blocking on the interior or – you know, like underneath coverage by the linebackers. There are little things going on that you're a little bit worried about as the season goes forward.
You know, let's break down the offensive line play, because right out of the press conference, it was pretty obvious that Coach London was not happy. And when a head football coach talks about execution, he's almost always talking about blocking and tackling. So let's talk about the blocking first. Was the blocking substandard? I mean, they got 545 yards of offense.
Yeah, I thought the pass blocking was pretty good, but the run blocking seemed to be inconsistent. You know, they had some trouble in short yardage situations where they didn't really get the kind of push that you'd think they would against a smaller FCS Richmond team. They had the one fourth down conversion that failed, for example, and that really seemed to have Coach London a little miffed after the game. That one play he seemed upset about, so... I think some of the run blocking was very inconsistent. It looked better on the edges than it did in the middle. I don't think that's surprising with those two tackles leading the way on the edge. So, really, the interior guys, there's three new starters in there. Yes, Polanco started last year, but he's in the center spot instead of the guard spot now. So, three new starters in terms of positions on the interior. I just think it may take a little while for them to gel.
Well, you know, speaking of the interior line play, Sean Cascarano is the right guard, and left guard is Cody Wallace. Now, interestingly, Cody Wallace went to Fork Union, was there at the same time as Morgan Moses. I would have thought maybe they would have put Wallace over there next to Moses on the right side. And the other thing is, what's your thought on Bowanko? I know he went out of the game, we think, with cramps at some point there in the second half. And then didn't they bring in Burbank?
Yeah, they brought in Ross Burbank, redshirt freshman, who was working with Matt Mihalik in the spring as the two centers while Bowanko sat out. He was recovering from shoulder surgery. So right now I think they moved Bowanko over because he's experienced enough that he can handle things in general in those middle line spots, whichever position you put him in between the two guards or the center spot. So they want someone experienced at center until Burbank gets called up, basically. So will that be this year or will that be in the out years? I think it's hard to tell right now. But Burbank played pretty well at the end of the game when Bowanko left, like you said, with what everybody thinks is cramps.
Chris, you know, Habo's all about defense. I always have been. That was my motto even when I played. No, but the newspaper today talked about the pass rush, the defensive ends. We just had Patrick Kearney on the show. So talk a little bit about the defensive end play and the pass rush. Is that a point of concern?
I'm not overly concerned with it. You know, Richmond was three-step drop, throw it quick, lots of wide receiver screens, you know, lots of quick dumps over the middle underneath the linebacker drop. So I don't think the pass rush had a lot of time to get there in terms of sacks. There were pretty significant pressures. You know, Billy Shouts, the team named him the defensive player of the game. That's a defensive end. So they obviously thought at least one defensive end played pretty well. He had three or four pressures, no sacks, but he was there a lot.
He had a tipped pass, too.
Yeah, Bill Shouts had a tip pass. Brent Urban had a tip pass at defensive tackle. Jake Snyder, I thought, was solid, and that's pretty much what you expect out of him at the other starting end. So not overly concerned because of the way Richmond was approaching things. There were enough pressures there that to think that if they continue to develop, that there's not too much to worry about.
What about the young secondary? What was your evaluation of them?
Inconsistent, which I think is what you would expect. You know, you had several of those guys up on the tackles chart after the game. Anthony Harris, Dwayne Kalinahoski, were tied for the team lead with Henry Coley, who's a linebacker. So two of your starting secondary guys are helping lead the team in tackles. What that tells me is that they were being picked on a little bit and probably leaving some openings in certain places. And so that's why their tackle totals would be up versus the linebackers, Greer and Reynolds, who you expect to lead things tackle-wise. Were not as high on the list. So I'm assuming that's because the secondary guys had some coverage issues here and there, but I think that's to be expected with four sophomores starting in the secondary.
Yeah, that it's going to take them a little while to learn what they're doing and improve their communication. Chris, first your thoughts on punting with Alec Vizinalik and also the field goal kicker. Have they made the improvement there that they need to make this transition successful in the kicking game?
Certainly hard to tell from one game. I thought the punter looked really good. Hang time was good. The average for the day was good. It didn't seem like a real slow release, you know, from the time he got to the ball to the time it was off his foot. Seemed to be right where it needed to be in that 1.9, 2.1 type of second range, I think, is what Alec told me in the spring. That's what they're shooting for. And then, of course, Drew Jared was 2-for-2 as a field goal kicker. So I don't think you can complain there. But I think we need a larger body of work before we know for sure how consistent those guys can be because they really didn't get that many opportunities on Saturday.
All right. Let's look at the wide receiver position, which is where Virginia needs to make giant strides. Tim Smith seemed to be getting some one-on-one coverage, and he seemed to be breaking away a lot of plays, but Virginia was taking the dump passes, i.e. quarterback Mike Rocco, through a lot of dump passes. I think Kevin Parks caught more balls on Saturday than he had all of last year. And Perry Jones looked great whenever he got a chance to touch the ball. Just your overall thoughts in that regard.
Yeah, it looked like when Richmond diagnosed that it was going to be pass, they were conceding anything 10 yards, 12 yards, and under. So they would just really, really drop back and concede some of those passes. The touchdown pass to Darius Jennings out on the outside was only like a 12, 15-yard pass.
Yep.
So they were conceding those a lot. Jennings just happened to make somebody miss on that particular play. So I think that's why you saw a lot of underneath stuff. You know, like you're a little bit concerned about taking shots downfield. You'd like to see him just throw some sometimes. But the one that jumps to mind with me for Rocco, he threw into triple coverage. The one that Phillip Sims threw 21, 25 yards into the end zone to Tim Smith was short, or Tim Smith ran his pattern too deep, one of the two. I'm not sure who was wrong. But you want to see some 20 to 25-yard passes, not just 12 to 15-yard passes mixed in there. It'll be interesting to see what other teams defend them like to see if either of the quarterbacks can deliver those type of balls for this offense, because I think this offense needs that if they're going to be explosive enough to win games against the better opponent.
We're visiting with the Sabres, Chris Wright. Chris, before we let you go, just give us a tidbit on Penn State. Obviously, we know they lost to Ohio, but do you have any information on the Nittany Lions for Saturday's game?
Well, I'm going to watch the film tomorrow, but I did see most of the first quarter. Their offense reminds me a lot of Virginia's offense. It's multiple sets. You'll see some three wide, four wide. Sometimes you'll see a couple tight ends. They did look like they like to use their tight ends underneath like Bill Belichick does up with the Patriots, and that's not surprising since that's where Coach O'Brien came from. So to me, I'm watching Penn State's tight ends against Virginia's linebackers on Saturday to see who has the better of that matchup, because Virginia's linebackers were not great in coverage against Richmond.
No, they weren't. And I think Greer is just – he's just not 100% yet. I think his commitment to football is 100%, but his right leg is not. All right, Chris, we're going to let you go because we're going to move on to Gordy Rawls and do a tribute to Dr. Frank McHugh. But thank you for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me. It was good to see Doc McHugh honored at halftime on Saturday.
I thought that was a big deal. Anyway, listen, you have a great night. Say hi to your family for us, all right?
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks,
care.
Chris.
All right, we're going to try to get Gordy Rawls on the phone right now. Dr. Rawls is a previous guest on the show and has been with Ortho Virginia, I believe, for his whole career. Interestingly enough, he did his residency at UVA and worked under Dr. McHugh and knew him very well and knows a lot of stories, but is someone that he respected deeply. And very much looking forward to getting Gordy on the phone here in just a minute. At the same time, let's remind folks that this coming Thursday night down at Sam Miller's at 6 p.m., the UVA Club of Richmond is hosting the kickoff party. UVA women's coach Joanne Boyle will be speaking. Tony Covington and Dave Kane will have a role. And good food.
And Hobbo and Frank will be there.
And Hobbo and Frank will be there. And we are proud sponsors of the UVA Club of Richmond's kickoff party.
All right, Mr. Maloney, I think we got Dr. Rawls on the phone.
Gordy, this is Frank.
Hey, Frank.
Hey, thank you for joining us tonight on Labor Day. And we appreciate you taking a few minutes out from your party there. Talk to us a little bit about your relationship with Dr. McHugh. We've already set the table.
Well, Dr. Frank McHugh, as everyone knows here in Virginia, really set the standard for orthopedic surgery, really providing special services in the realm of sports medicine. And he was one of the finest gentlemen and great surgeon and just a dedicated individual to athletes around the state, and particularly to the university athletes at the University of Virginia. And I was just fortunate enough to be one of his residents in the late 70s and early 80s, and to learn a lot from just a fine gentleman.
Yeah, Gordy, this is Jim Hobgood. I think anybody that was an athlete at Virginia over the last 30, 40 years has a relationship with Dr. McHugh. Now, I never had surgery done, but had problem with an Achilles tendon my junior year that involved poor Dr. McHugh having to fly to places like Charleston, West Virginia, State College, Pennsylvania, to do a little needle work on my Achilles tendon to get me ready to play. But you're right, just a terrific guy and just gave so much to the University of Virginia and so many stories about how many times he'd go and do things for high school athletes around the state without compensation.
Yes. I just, you know, there's so many things that he did for the university and for, as you say, younger athletes traveling all over to, you know, attend their games. He spent Friday nights quite frequently traveling all over the state and, you know, attending football games just out of interest and to see players whom he had worked on and, you know, he was just dedicated to his career. I'll throw out one other little thing, and that is that some people may not know that when a high school athlete came to Charlottesville to have surgery by Dr. McHugh, and financial concerns were an issue, he took them after their surgery directly from the recovery room at the University of Virginia Hospital to his home and kept them in his home. And his wife contributed as well. She was a registered nurse. and you know, helped get them through the first 24 hours before maybe, you know, 1 or 2 days before they headed home. And that was just above and beyond what the normal call to duty might be. There were many examples of this.
You know,
but he's just a special person.
One of the wonderful things about Saturday's game, they honored DeBrickashaw Ferguson, and they also honored Matt Schaub. But I think the featured part of the celebration was honoring Dr. McHugh, and his widow was at midfield with Craig Littlepage and the other dignitaries at midfield, and they presented her with a giant plaque, and there was about 25 photographers down there on the field taking pictures. And I think people understand, you know, what a huge impact Dr. McHugh had. I mean, what did you say, 3 or 4 decades there at University of Virginia?
Yeah, I think it was around close to 40 years.
Wow.
And, you know, I think you'd sum it up by just saying he really did touch the lives of so many people. And, you know, most of them were athletes, but also patients. He was also a hand surgeon, a great knee surgeon, as you had to be to be a sports medicine specialist, but also touched the lives of many orthopedic surgeons that he trained.
Well, Gordy, we thank you for taking a couple of minutes just to call in and reminisce about Dr. McHugh. We'll let you get back to your Labor Day activities, and look forward to having you back on the show before too long.
Okay, guys.
All right, Dr. Gordy Rawls, we're going to go to our last break here. We'll be back with the Olympic Sports Report and other things after these messages. Stay with us.